Hello, everybody, and welcome to the latest edition of the Pro Basketball Talk podcast here at NBC Sports NBA Finals edition. Today, we're going to be breaking down these NBA Finals, talking about, well, Toronto's first trip to the Finals. Can the dynasty that is the Golden State Warriors add to that trophy collection and cement their legacy even more? We're going to get into all that with Dan Feldman from NBC Sports in just a second. I wanted you to know, though, later this week, a little promo here. We will be dropping another podcast, myself and Rob Doster from College Basketball Talk, who knows college basketball inside and out and the players there inside and out. We're going to have a full first round mock draft podcast. It's going to be two parts spread across College Basketball Talk and Pro Basketball Talk, breaking down all 30 first round picks, talking about players that your team might be interested in. A lot more detail than you're going to get a lot of other places. You're going to love this. It, like I said, it should drop Thursday night or probably Friday morning, again, in two parts across College Basketball Talk and Pro Basketball Talk at NBC, on the College Basketball Talk and NBA pages at NBC Sports. Easy enough to find them, and there'll be a lot more promotion, just something to keep your eye out for, or ear out for, I guess. And with no further ado, let's welcome in Dan Feldman. How you doing today, Dan?
Good. How are you?
I'm good. It's going to be It's nice to have a change of pace NBA Finals in this sense. I mean, yes, the Warriors are back for the fifth straight year, but you're going to be in Toronto starting in a couple days. It's a different feel, I think, just not having, I guess not having LeBron in the playoffs at all, but especially not having him in the East and not being back in Cleveland this year.
It's a little weird to me how we didn't really care so much about LeBron missing the playoffs through most of the playoffs. You know, everybody paid attention when the Lakers got eliminated, noted it's going to be a big change not having LeBron there. But I don't think it really got brought up until the finals. Now all of a sudden it's like, whoa, it's really setting in for me, and I think a lot of people, LeBron isn't there, and it's really a credit to how he made himself a mainstay in the finals for so long.
I mean, eight straight years, that's just kind of, it genuinely is pretty ridiculous as a stat to have done that. Across a couple of teams and leading some teams that, frankly, just probably had no business being there all the way back. So it's good for them, good for him for doing that. But I like the change of pace. Let's talk about these finals. I think the storyline discussion, and there's some great storylines, but kind of has to start with Kevin Durant. When does he come back, or does he even come back?
Yeah, I think it's a real question at this point. This has lingered longer than anybody indicated it would, and That creates a lot of uncertainty of who knows when it's going to end.
Yeah. How much does this change things for you, from your perspective, in terms of, I mean, look, Kevin Durant is arguably the best player on the planet. Actually, I don't even think it's arguable. I would say he is the best player on the planet. Kawhi may be playing at that level right now, but he only played 60 games. He missed all of last season. He's not going to supplant Durant in my book at the top of the list yet. Getting him back obviously changes things for the Warriors, but how much do you see that changing things in terms of, like, just the matchup?
Well, it definitely changes the Warriors stylistically. They play with a lot more movement, yep, ball and player when he doesn't play, because they know they're compensating for having less talent. And so they're all coming in with the mindset of, we've got to work harder to get good shots, and they're running a scheme that they're used to. So there's maybe a little more cohesion in addition to that additional motivation. But I think one thing that gets lost, it's really hard for people to process the idea that a team could lose a player as good as Kevin Durant and still maybe be the best team in the league. That's how good the Warriors are, and we're just not used to having a team so good. So the simple response is always, oh, they lost Kevin Durant, they're in big trouble. You lose a player like Kevin Durant, you're in big trouble. The Warriors are just so good. I won't say it doesn't matter, because it absolutely matters. Their margin for error is much higher with Kevin Durant, but they're still really, really darn good.
Yeah. I think the other thing that becomes interesting is just the matchups, right? If Kevin Durant is on the floor, you're going to put Kawhi Leonard on him a lot, but that keeps Kawhi Leonard from chasing Curry or Klay Thompson or wherever you're going to assign him that game, whoever you feel you need to lock down at that point. It's kind of a natural matchup in some ways, but it means you're putting a lesser defender on well, the greatest shooting backcourt of all time. So, good, you know, it can create some real matchup issues for them. I think when he returns, and I wonder if they feel like they didn't have to play him against Portland, then they knew it. If they start to feel pressured here, does he suddenly appear?
So, you know, it's so tough to tell with other people's injuries.
Yeah, exactly.
But one explanation I've heard of this injury is, yes, there's risk of re-aggravation. Yes, it hurts to play through. But it maybe is a type of injury that doesn't limit you so much while you're playing through it, other than the pain, which I don't want to discount. That's not nothing. That's a major thing. And the threat of aggravation is real. But if it comes down to it late in the series, then maybe Kevin Durant says, yeah, look, I'll play through the pain. If I aggravate it, I'll have the whole offseason to recover. It sounds like it could be the type of injury where you are making those types of decisions.
I think the other guy, by the way, DeMarcus Cousins, could be back this series. That's just not as big an impact, because I don't know that this matchup works for Cousins at all, really. I mean, yeah, there might be moments he can bully Marc Gasol a little down in the post. Gasol's not that easy to bully. Like, he will hold his ground. But once you get past that, he's not mobile enough to hang with Ibaka, and they're going to target him. They're going to pull him into every pick and roll, try to get him moving on the perimeter, which he just doesn't do well. I think he gets spot duty in this series, even if he were healthy.
Well, I'm not as convinced. Maybe. It's a real interesting game of cat and mouse there, but I look at kind of a starting point as how do the Raptors want to defend the Warriors? Yeah. And I think it makes sense in a lot of ways to try to switch. If you're really blitzing Curry hard on some of those pick and rolls, well, then the Warriors have 4-on-3s with Draymond Green. That's trouble. Draymond Green is so good in those situations. If you play like the Trailblazers played early in that series, where you're just dropping on those pick and rolls, you're giving Curry open three-pointers, that's no good. So I think switching could make a lot of sense. If you look at the two Warriors who are best at attacking switches in those one-on-one matchups, I think it's probably Kevin Durant, and it's probably DeMarcus Cousins, at least fully healthy, fully functional. I'm not sure if the Warriors can have that DeMarcus Cousins, but I do think there's a chance that the Raptors are switching a lot. You try and get DeMarcus Cousins switched on the smaller player and let him go to work inside. It's not the style they love, but I think it's one that could be effective. Now, like you said, on the other end, the Raptors are going to really target him and make him work defensively, and maybe you're giving up just as much as you're getting with him. But maybe it's a way for the Warriors to dictate the matchups, to make sure that Marc Gasol is playing when they want him to play, because Gasol has to be the matchup, I think, on DeMarcus Cousins. So I do think there's a spot for him this series if he's ready to go, but that's such a huge question after all the time he's missed.
Yeah, exactly. There's going to be rust. I mean, it's actually a good question for game one, period, is just how much rust we're going to see out of Golden State. For people who don't know, the Warriors are pretty heavily favored. I think they've been more heavily favored to win final series, but they are definitely a heavy betting favorite. But last time I looked, they had started as a 1.5 favorite, in game one, and it was pick 'em last time I looked. Huh. I think there's a sense that first game for Toronto, at home, all that emotion, they're coming off a series more recently, you've got a rusty Warriors team without Kevin Durant, I think there's a sense that the Raptors will take game one. I genuinely think there's a real chance of that.
Yeah, I do too. And I think this applies to the whole series, but I think this applies most to game one. And I think the two biggest factors that people are not talking about enough, the Raptors are hungrier than the Warriors.
Yep.
And the Raptors just had to elevate their play to the highest level that these guys have ever played to beat the Bucks. The Bucks are really good, and they pushed the Raptors hard. The Raptors responded to that by playing well. The Bucks didn't lose that series. The Raptors went out and won it. And that, I think, matters. I think that carries over. The Warriors aren't used to elevating their game to that level because Portland didn't push them.
No, it's going to be kind of a jump for them in a lot of ways. I think that that's a good point. This is a Raptors team that does believe in itself now. And the last time we saw Kawhi Leonard against the Warriors, he was tearing them up as a member of the Spurs until Zaza Pachulia slid under him, rolled his ankle, and that was it. But remember, they were up by, I want to say 20 in that game, right? Yeah, they were crushing them until that injury. He gives them problems because he gives everyone problems. He's playing as well as he's ever played in the last, five, seven games.
Yeah, it's so nice to see him get another chance at this after things went south. Yes. In San Antonio. That was building to be such an interesting matchup. And, I do think it's a real small sample, right? They were up 20. It was one half of basketball. The Spurs were shooting unsustainably hot. Like, I don't know who wins that series, but you could tell the Spurs had a game plan they thought could work built around Kawhi Leonard, and I want to see if the Raptors can do the same against a team that, is still viewed as the best in the league.
Yeah, well, that's because you're going to have to beat them, right? What are you looking? There's some interesting matchups. I mean, what are you looking forward to in matchup wise in this series?
Well, we talked. The number one thing is to see how the Raptors defend those Curry pick and rolls, and just defend in general. What types of strategy they use there. So that's number one. But we already talked about that. I'm also curious about the benches. The Raptors' bench looked very bad until it looked very good, and I'm not sure what's sustainable there. The Raptors' bench in particular, they lost depth in the Marc Gasol trade. They lost depth in the Kawhi Leonard trade. Those were good trades still, but this is the side effect because you have fewer players you can rely on, and it's definitely going to be interesting to see which Raptors can maintain that momentum off the bench.
Getting OG Anunoby back would be huge for them, and he is expected to return, they think, during these finals. That gives them a long, switchable defender off the bench who, even if he's a little cold on the offensive end to start, man, they could use his defense. I'll tell you the other thing, just when you get into the benches for me. Fred VanVleet is... I love watching him play. He's so much... I just enjoy his energy. If Danny Green is slumping still, and you've got to play a lot of VanVleet in this series, it's a much bigger problem because VanVleet is 6 foot. Kyle Lowry is listed as 6'1". Curry 6'3". Thompson 6'7". It is much tougher to defend. Like, you're going to have to put these guys on much bigger guys somewhere, and it becomes a much bigger problem, much harder to defend. You can go ask Portland how that goes. Like, if you've got an undersized backcourt, it is not easy to deal with the Warriors. And Danny Green has to be able to stay on the floor. Just, he absolutely has to in this series.
That's a great point. On the bright side, you know Danny Green's going to defend. That's going to be a constant, whether his shot is falling or not. And I have every reason to believe his shot will fall more often, just like I have every reason to believe Fred VanVleet's shot will fall less often. Fred VanVleet does not shoot as well as it looked like those last couple games against the Bucks. He's capable of doing that sometimes, but you can't count on that. Likewise, Danny Green sometimes has off-shooting nights like he had the last couple games. That's not what you count on for him either. So I think both of them, there's going to be a regression to the mean.
Yep, definitely. If you're Golden State, how do you defend Kawhi Leonard? I mean, you've got a lot of bodies to throw at him, but Draymond obviously is going to get some time. If when Kevin Durant returns, Durant gets some time. But what's your primary strategy there? I guess the question is, do you risk letting him go off and just kind of man up with a good defender on him and just count on that and stay with the other guys and not let him start becoming a playmaker, which he did in maybe the best playmaking of his career the last couple games? Or do you let him, start to do what the Bucks did, which is kind of just throw everything at him?
Yeah, it's tough because he stepped up as a playmaker like that. He had not shown that level before, and it makes the calculus very different. You know, I want Andre Iguodala to guard him a lot, like you said, Draymond Green at times. I don't know. When somebody's playing as well as Kawhi Leonard, sometimes you just throw up your hands and say, I don't know, because the way he plays, it's so defense agnostic. He's capable of getting to his spots, getting good shots for him up over and over and over. And if you send a lot of help, he's strong enough, he's got the court vision to take advantage of as a passer, and he's doing it now. I don't know. Do you have an idea of something? I don't even know where to start because I don't think any of it would work. Do you have an idea of what your initial strategy would be?
I would go more with, look, I've got Andre Iguodala, I've got Klay Thompson, I've got Draymond Green, and this is all for game one and probably two. It's hard for me to imagine Durant plays in two, but even though there's, I lost track of 16 days between the first two games. What is it? Which is four? Thursday to Sunday, so that's a lot of time. But that said, I would go with a lot of Iguodala and then just try to stay home, not let the other guys get going. A little bit of the, how you defended Jordan, how do you defend Steve Nash? Let them get 40. Don't let anybody else score, I think, is a better strategy. But he's playing at such a level right now that strategy can backfire.
I'll say the one thing the Warriors have going for them in this matchup is we just listed a bunch of names. Yeah. Klay Thompson, Draymond Green, Andre Iguodala. Sean Livingston could maybe do a little bit. Jonas Jerebko could even have a role. Alfonso McKinney could have a role. That's a lot of people to throw at somebody whose durability has been a question. Now, Kawhi has looked great lately. He's playing a lot of minutes, playing hard offensively and defensively, doing everything. He looked a little banged up in the last year. He's played right through it. So there's no specific reason now to question his durability, except for the last 2 years of what we've seen. And maybe you can wear him down a little by just throwing a lot of different guys at him and always having a fresh defender on him.
I think that that does help, certainly. And certain guys, look, Andre Iguodala, man, talk about, that's an interesting matchup because two of the guys with the best hands in the league for just reaching in and picking each other. It'd be, they'll just steal the ball from each other for like four possessions in a row. Just at back end.
Well, could, they might get a lot of steals. I'm not sure on each other. Iguodala's too smart for that. And Kawhi might be the best both ways. He might be the best at swiping. He might be the best at being strong and not getting swipes.
Yeah, he is incredibly good at that. If you're the Warriors, what's your bellwether outside of Durant getting healthy? Like, what's the bellwether for you? Is it getting Curry going? And by the way, keeping Curry away from taking stupid ticky-tack fouls, he's got to stay on the court this time. Like this isn't Portland anymore. Like, you got to bring it for this series.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. For me, a lot of it is, are Curry and Klay Thompson's shots falling. I think as far as, but that's kind of out of your control.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, you're going to get them some good shots and some tough shots, and they'll hit some of both. And you just got to hope it's a lot, and it often will be because those guys are great shooters. I think the bellwether almost always for the Warriors is how many shots is Klay Thompson getting? Because that's when their offense is really functioning. They're getting him good looks, open threes. He's moving without the ball, and it sets him up. And it's not – I mean, Klay Thompson does his part to make that happen. But when it happens, when the ball gets to him, it's because everybody else is doing the right things too.
The book on defending the Warriors for, I don't know, the last 5 years, pretty much the whole Kerr era, is be more physical with them. Be physical with them. They don't particularly like that, and it, you know, interferes with their free-flowing game. Is Toronto set up to do that?
Yes, absolutely. I also think I agree with you. That's what everybody says the book is. I don't think that's the case. I don't think the Warriors are soft. I think they can handle physicality. I think that's an unfair label to put on them. But what else are you supposed to do, right? You got this very talented team capable of handling physicality. Of the Warriors can do everything. So I do think you've got to be physical with them. I think it's the best or the least bad approach. And yeah, I think the Raptors are set up well to do it. They're a team full of smart, physical defenders, everything you'd want in a matchup to stop the Warriors, I think. I'm not sure it'll be enough, but I think it matches up well for Toronto.
I think so, too. I will say this is the other thing that's got to concern you about, like, the bellwether of being just Curry shots falling. Steph Curry really wants a Finals MVP. He would really like one of those. He probably should have gotten one already. Going back to the Andre Iguodala, got the first one for them. And I don't begrudge Kevin Durant getting the last two because I think he was the best player on the floor for the last 2 years. But he will not be on the floor for at least the start of this series. I think Curry wants it, and that might be part of this. He is capable, obviously, of taking games over, and I think he's going to have more of that mindset this year. In this series, especially if he's got a defender on him, he thinks he can, expose. Let's put it that way.
Real quick, can we revisit who you would have had for Finals MVP the previous 4 years when the Warriors have been there? So in 2015, I would have had LeBron. 2016, yeah. I would have had LeBron. 2017, I would have had Durant. 2018, I would have had LeBron. If you had to give it to Warriors in years they won, if you just really can't give it to somebody on the losing team, in 2015, I would have given it to Curry over Iguodala, and then last year, I do think it was correct for Durant if it had to be a Warrior. I'm just curious how you saw those.
I think the last two, to me, it was Durant. Obviously, LeBron, the year the Cavs won. I thought Curry that first year in 2015, with all due respect to Andre Iguodala, his going on LeBron James, his defense in that series was huge, but I still think that doesn't happen without Curry to me. That's still a Curry Finals. Looking back, I think that that's the one he should have.
Yeah, I agree on that. I do think it's important to him. I don't think it's the most important thing to him. Look at last year, I think it was game three, where he had played really well the first couple games and had a real clunker. Durant was awesome. And Curry kind of just screamed as he was leaving the court. And I don't want to say I can read his mind, but if you told me he was thinking, man, I just let Finals MVP get away, how would he, like, if I knew he were thinking that, I said, how would he react? It looked like exactly how he reacted.
Yeah. For the Raptors, what's the key? What's the, we talked a little about this, but, like, what do you think is the one thing that has to happen for them to win this? And I will just say this, it starts with me. Kawhi Leonard has to be the best player in the series for them to win. For them to have a chance, he's got to continue this level of dominance. Other things have to happen too, but it's got to start there.
So I'm going to go somewhere slightly different. I'm going to say they need to be as cohesive defensively as it seems they can be. They have so many smart, good defenders that work well together that have done it for a little while now that really came together against the Bucks. But Marcus Hall was an in-season acquisition. Kawhi Leonard and Danny Green have a lot of reps together. They don't have those reps with Kyle Lowry, with Pascal Siakam. So much of good defense, especially against a complicated scheme like the Warriors, is doing it together for a long time and having that chemistry with your teammates. I don't know how quickly the Raptors have developed that, but to me, that's going to be the big thing. If there are defensive breakdowns, if there are miscommunications, the Warriors are going to take advantage.
Their half-court defense in particular was so good at the end of that last series. Just phenomenal. But it has to continue at that level. By the way, I would say on the other end, that's something to watch too. The Warriors are capable of playing really good defense, but they can also snooze. And if they do, and this is still a really good Raptors team. If you snooze on them, it's not just Kawhi Leonard that will go up. I mean, Kyle Lowry can have great games, obviously. Pascal Siakam, on down the list, like they, you know, through their bench, through Van Vliet and everybody, they've got guys who can light it up. And if you're not taking them seriously, you will pay for it. And I think you'd like to think the Warriors, like, oh, man, they're in the finals. They'll be focused. Maybe.
Maybe. Well, I do think, look, they're better with Durant. I know you have to say that before you say anything else, but I do think this is an area where they're better without Durant because they know they need to compensate for not having Durant. I do think there's a real thing where they defend with more energy because they know they don't have Durant to bail them out on the other end. And it's not as if, you know, Durant can be a good defender, but it's not as if the bigger loss with Durant is on offense. It's not defense.
It was another big factor in the Bucks series for the Raptors was the controlling of pace. Do they need to do that again? Do they absolutely need to slow this and grind this out a little bit? The Warriors can win that kind of game, but what they, I think, would, do they want to slow it down again and not let the Warriors get out and run a little? Or do they want to pick up the pace a little bit and think that they are more athletic and can make that work in transition?
Yeah, I think it can work for them. I know it's a little counterintuitive, but I think if, you know, it depends how it's happening. If it's the Raptors making sloppy turnovers, no, that's not good. But I think the way the pace can be high and it works for Toronto is the Raptors outworking the Warriors. I think that's something that's in play. And if the pace is fast because of that, that's obviously great for Toronto. And I wouldn't tell the Raptors, I don't think they should slow it down if it's trending that way. But that's also something I was talking about, Kawhi's game, his style being built for this. A lot of it is because he ISOs, he doesn't really turn it over that much. It's a real secure way to play without turning it over. And so, yes, if I'm the Raptors, I'm looking to push a lot and challenge the Warriors and make them meet the Raptors' effort level. I think the Raptors' effort level in the last series was higher than the Warriors in their last series. So if I'm the Raptors, I want them to meet that. Failing that, go through Kawhi and not really worry about turning it over a lot.
You got any guys you think are going to be sleepy and port in this series? Like guys that, you know, role players that could end up having a big, big say in what goes down.
Well, that's a good question. You know, we haven't talked at all about Kyle Lowry. I don't know if it's fair to say somebody who's been an all-star in the last 5 years is a role player, but he's somebody who's taken his licks throughout the playoffs over many years. Some of it his own doing, some of it just things going on around him. He hasn't been here before. He's a veteran who's been through a lot, very hungry for a championship. I'm curious because at times in the playoffs over the years, it looks like he's pressing. It looks like he's trying too hard to make it happen, and it leads to mistakes and him playing tight end's not good. When he plays loose, when he's not overthinking it, he's awesome. And so I am curious what Kyle Lowry will get in the series.
I think that's a good question. I'll tell you, the guy on Golden State just, I think, could have an impact is Kevon Looney. athletic up front can give them... Look, they gave up a lot of offensive rebounds last series to the Bucks at points. Looney's a guy who can make you pay in that way and get some putbacks, put some stuff up. Also, he can be an athletic defender and block some shots and make some plays. I think he could end up having a role in this series because it just... what they're going to need kind of suits what he can do.
Great call.
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting. And then you obviously, you know, it comes back to Cousins and where you put him. I think Pascal Siakam has got to have a big series if Toronto is going to succeed in this series. It's going to be there. And then there's that weird thing that's just going to hang over. Like, Dan, every off day story you and I are going to do is going to come down to, hey, Do you think Kawhi staying? Do you think Durant staying? Like, it's going to be a weird subtext to this finals that both of these teams could potentially look dramatically different next year.
So a question that you can't really ask at this moment, you know, while they're concentrating on these games, but I was really curious about: do you think there was a point, and when was it, that Kawhi Leonard envisioned spending the rest of his career with the Spurs? Do you think there was a point, and when was it, that Kevin Durant envisioned spending the rest of his career with the Warriors? Now, Kawhi's already moved on. There are obviously plenty of rumors that Durant's going to follow. But you have these two stars who maybe at one point in their careers thought they had figured it out, that they had found a team that was built for them, that they were really happy with and were comfortable. And now Durant, even if he stays in Golden State, this has been in many ways an uncomfortable year, a lot of things to deal with because of the speculation about him leaving, that you got these two superstars trying to find their way in not the environment they expected, but here they are back on the biggest stage.
Yeah, and those two guys obviously are never going to talk about this. Like, people, occasionally reporters will quietly probe it, but those guys will brush those questions aside quickly. They're not going to discuss it here. The stuff is going to come from, honestly, just anonymous sources around the league type of stuff. I think both guys are really good at tuning that stuff out. Like, I don't really think it impacts the series. It's more of a fan base thing where there's just, again, for people who don't know, again, game one is Thursday. Friday, there's a practice. And there's a lot of game talk out of that and what adjustments everybody's going to make. And that's kind of the focus of Friday. Then you got that second day off, Saturday, and there's practices again and media availability again. And all those game questions kind of have been exhausted, and then it gets weird. And I think that there's going to be a little more of that with this series just because of what's hanging over it. And the teams will work hard to tune that stuff out, but it's just going to be there. It's going to be a subtext to this series, whatever you think is going to happen with these guys this summer. And, you know, and whatever Kawhi is, you know, again, it's turn, you know, blood from a stone trying to actually get an answer for this kind of thing. He would never actually say it. So it'll be an interesting subtext to the whole experience, though. So do you have a prediction, Dan? I mean, and now that we've talked about this, was there something we didn't discuss that you thought we should?
Well, I don't know how much more there is to say about it, but Raptors game ones usually don't go well. I know
that's
the
true.
Personnel has changed a lot, and maybe that doesn't matter, or maybe there's an energy of people in the crowd who've been fans the whole time, of people in the organization who've been around for a nervousness that's contagious, something. I don't know. There's still, to me, some thought of maybe there's something going on with Raptors in game one that carries over, even if it's reduced as the team's biggest star has changed. Still maybe something going on there.
Yeah, that actually could be a thing. And by the way, I don't think what you want to do is give the Warriors game one. That becomes that. Then you've made your sledding really uphill the rest of the way. If they get out of there with a 1-0 lead, game two.
I know a team that gave the Warriors game one, game two, and game four, and they turned out okay.
Yeah, that's true. The Warriors are capable of that. I feel comfortable in saying, though, that Andrew Bogut's injuries will not impact this series in quite the same way. I will throw out my prediction. I think, and I got a feeling that this is kind of the going norm pick, so it's very dull. I'm taking Warriors in six. I think they win it on their home court. I think that the Raptors really push them, but at the end of the day, the Warriors have an ability to defend and raise their game to a level I'm not sure that the Raptors can reach.
Yep, I'm with you. We're in six. I think maybe the Raptors can reach that level. I'm not sold they can't. I just see too much talent, too much experience, too much cohesion in Golden State to pick against them. I would not be surprised one bit if the Raptors win this series. I think people are probably sleeping on them a little too much, but I still can't pick against the Warriors. What would you lean, though, as your second most likely prediction? Now that we both have Warriors in six, if you were to swing one way or another, what would your second most likely?
You know what's funny? Because the instinct would be to go Raptors in seven, that it would take them winning at home. But I don't think that's, to me, I think if the Raptors win this, they could get it in five. Like, they'd be more aggressive. I think that they'd crush them quite more quickly than that. Which is kind of a weird thing to say, but I think to me, it feels like if they get rolling and truly believe in themselves and this and can pick up to that level, they can do this, win the first two at home, steal one, close it out.
Wow, so I was expecting you to say Warriors in seven or Warriors in five. This is real boring podcast content because I'm on the exact same page. I'm very close between Raptors in seven and Raptors in five as the next most likely for those very reasons.
Yeah, the Warriors are maybe capable of just blowing this thing open, but I just don't feel that way in this series. I feel like this is a lot closer to than people think. I think this is, look, to use these playoffs as an example, this is a better team than Houston, and Warriors better bring it, from game one, like they did in that series.
Yes, I forgot about Houston, the real Western Conference Finals.
Yes, exactly. Sorry, with all due respect, Portland, sorry. All right, Dan, thanks for doing this, man. Dan or I will be at every finals game and possibly both of us at some of them. We're going to have a lot of finals content up at NBC Sports, direct from all these things. So please check it out. Check out what we're doing. Dan, everybody can find you on Twitter at?
I'm at Dan Feldman, NBA. And I've just got to note how much I appreciated you closing this podcast with a Canadian reference by apologizing to Portland.
I'm practicing for when I'm again. Sorry. I used to think that was a joke until I a stereotype, and then I actually went to Canada last summer on vacation with my family, and now it's kind of a thing. Like, I've never had a waitress apologize that many times for perfectly good service. I'm like, all right. It was weird. All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening. And again, check out later this week. Rob Doster and myself will have a full two-part podcast breaking down a mock draft of the first round with all 30 players. And man, that guy just has a lot of insight on these guys. He's seen them for years. He goes to the high schools and watches, Hoop Jam, Peach Jam and all that stuff. So check it out. It's going to be great info, and we'll be back later this week. Thanks a lot for listening.